I could not trust myself to look on her again, as she lay sobbing on the ground in all the abandonment of her terror and despair, that my heart should soften and she should beguile my soul once more. When I returned to my apartments, I found Alzulid awaiting me with the news that Queen Artemisia had fled during the night from the palace. "It is perhaps as well that she had done so," said he, "since we could not have retained her as a prisoner without raising around us a hornet's nest of her powerful kindred, who would be only too glad of a pretext to attack us. As it is, they have no excuse for doing so, and so soon as you are securely seated upon the throne of Persia, we shall have ample opportunity of avenging upon Artemisian our mutual wrongs, and of humbling even to the dust this proud queen. First grasp with a firm hand the regal power and all else will follow."
"Doubtless it is even as you dost say, Alzulid. But, oh, friend, to one whose wrongs burn the heart as do mine, it is hard to wait, even for an hour, ere I may satiate my thirst for vengeance. Upon Artemisia we may yet avenge ourselves, but cannot restore to me the happiness, which I have lost forever. Can anyone give back to me my wife, in her innocence and purity? Art you so sure, Ahensimen, that she was indeed innocent in thought, as well as in fact, ere Artemisia and her son tempted her to fall? Methinks that virtue must be of a poor quality, which yields to the first assault, and that love but a base counterfeit which fades before the glitter of a king's crown. For you it is a bitter awakening from your illusion, but if Zuleika had no true love for you, doth it matter so much whose hand had drawn aside the veil from her real nature? Think not that I fail in sympathy with you because I speak thus, or that I know not how sore your heart doth feel. How empty is this hour of your triumph, since she who should have been the chief sharer of its pride had proved so faithless. I would but arouse you from dwelling upon the past, which you canst not alter, and bid you turn to that future, which is yet your own, and which you canst shape to compensate you at least in part, for the disappointment of your affection. Let Persia henceforth be your mistress, and the prosperity of your people your chief thought. Chapter 29. Artemisia and Ahmed, in sending Zuleika to the fortress in which I intended she should pass her days, I allowed her, as a special favor, to take with her the faithful Negro woman who had nursed her as an infant, and who ever showed a devotion to her mistress, which was worthy of a more grateful object. It was this woman who had helped Zuleika to remove the dead body of King Selim from her chamber, and who possessed more of Zuleika's confidence than any other person. This slave, whose name was Bamba, soon contrived to ingratiate herself into the favor of the humbler guards at the fortress, and was allowed to pass in and out with comparative freedom, a circumstance which inspired Zuleika with a plan for making her escape. To one like my discarded wife, the solitary imprisonment to which she was condemned was almost as terrible a thing as death itself. To feel her youth and her beauty withering away between four gloomy walls, to have no companion but a humble slave, no fine dresses, no costly jewels to wear, no glittering baubles to toy with, no pretty things to surround her, no one to pay her homage, none to envy or to flatter, this was indeed a bitter fate, and the feelings of the vain, selfish, frivolous beauty towards me were full of the most intense hate. For was it not I who had sent her to this awful prison? My scorn and contempt when I had spurned her from me with my foot, had galled and wounded her vanity as my love had never been able to touch her heart. My bitter words rankled in her mind, though my words of fond endearment had made but little impression. The dim sense she had of the truth in my angry speech stabbed her to the quick, disturbing that good opinion of herself which she had ever cherished, and shaking her perfect faith in her own amiability, her own beauty, her own worth. Anything she had done, she had fully justified to herself in her own mind, and my outspoken words she regarded as a deadly insult to her self-respect, and an outrage upon her self-love, which was unpardonable. I had despised her. I had rejected her attempts at a reconciliation. I had heaped contempt and injury upon her, and for me she felt a vehemence of petty spite, which for the first time in her life brought her to the verge of feeling a strong, passionate emotion. At last her tepid, selfish nature was roused into some throb of hot anger, some sense of the strength of the passions, which can stir the human heart, and next to her desire for freedom, was the desire to revenge upon me what she was pleased to call her wrongs. As day after day passed on, and the weary weeks changed into months as weary, she paced to and fro in her prison like a panthress in her cage, planning how to get free. At last the ease with which Bamba could enter and leave the fortress suggested a scheme to her mind. Gold and jewelry she had none. Everything of value, which might have served to bribe her guards to help her, had been taken away. Friends she had none, save this one poor slave, yet in her devotions Yuleika possessed a treasure more potent than any gold, more valuable than any jewels. If Yuleika sighed for freedom, Bamba would hesitate at nothing to procure it. Did she but know how to set to work, and when Yuleika called her to her and told her of a plan, Bamba acquiesced at once. "See now, good Bamba," said Yuleika, "it is now 4 terrible months that we have endured the life of this prison. It might well be 4 years, to me it seems an eternity. I can support this life no longer. For so desperate a case we must try a desperate remedy. As for you, you must find means to reach Queen Artemisia. I have no money to give you, so you must even beg your way. If you are missed, I shall pretend to great concern for you, I shall show great anger, and say you, even you, hast deserted me in my captivity. I shall ask daily for you, and weary them with my importunities for news, that they may not suspect that I have sent you from me. If Artemisia will help, let her give you gold, for a golden key will open even a prison door, be it well applied. And surely the queen will help to free me when you dost tell her of all that I will do, all that I can tell." Bamba prostrated herself at Zuleika's feet, and kissing them vowed that if it was possible for one poor slave to move the heart of Artemisia, Zuleika should have the chance of freedom. Then after a few more directions from her mistress, set forth upon her long pilgrimage. With infinite labor and difficulty, the poor faithful woman found out the queen, who had taken refuge with some of her kinsfolk, and who had been joined by Prince Ahmed, with whom she made common cause against me. Very eagerly did she listen to the tale told her by poor Bamba, and after a little consideration as to the best means of helping Zuleika, she sent an eunuch of her court with a large amount of money to accompany Bamba, and help her to effect Zuleika's deliverance. Having given orders that they should bribe liberally those who kept the prisoner, she also sent word to Prince Ahmed, who happened to be at the time absent from the palace, bidding him to go and see what assistance he could render, and how swiftly he could bring Zuleika to the queen. "Help this woman," said she, "by all means in your power, for in so doing you wilt help both thyself and me. Through this woman's aid I trust to be avenged upon the man who had robbed me of a son, and you of a kingdom." Chapter 30, The Escape of Zuleika. It was a hot, sultry day. The sun poured down its burning rays upon the wide stretch of sandy plain. The scorching dust blistered the skin, and the fierce glare from the white sand blinded the eyes of the weary travelers who struggled painfully across the arid wilderness, known as the Great Salt Desert. The wretched camels they bestrode seemed scarce able to drag their limbs another pace, while the terrible thirst, which consumed alike the poor animals and their riders, was rendered the more unbearable by the sight on the horizon of a small clump of the trees, which marked the presence of one of the few wells of that almost waterless region, a well which neither camels nor travelers seemed destined ever to reach. Two of these unfortunate people were women. The third was a Nubian slave, one of those useful men who are found in attendance upon the harems of the East. As one of the wretched camels sank in a dying condition upon the hot sand, the woman who had been mounted upon it extricated herself from the poor animal, exclaiming in a fretful tone to the slave who hurried to her assistance, "Trouble not about me, it is vain to hope that we can escape from this horrible desert. And after all, what doth it signify to any where the bones of the unfortunate Zuleika rest? I can struggle no more, and like this wretched camel, which might surely have struggled yet a little further, I must even lay me down upon the sand and die." She gave an impatient kick with her foot to the luckless camel, whose failure at such a time inspired her, not with pity for its sufferings, but annoyance and disappointment for herself, and then, with more vigor than is usually shown by one at the point of death, She walked a few paces away and threw herself upon the ground. The other woman, who was no other than Zuleika's faithful slave Bamba, had by this time also dismounted, and with a solicitude akin to that of some faithful dog, strove to shield her mistress from the fierce rays of the sun with her own body, while the man, after a short conference, set forth alone to seek for water at the distant well. Hours passed, ere the man returned, and during that weary time Zuleika sank from a state of fretful complaining into a semi-unconsciousness between sleep and utter exhaustion, the poor woman beside her being also overcome. At last the sun sank, and the short twilight gave place to the darkness and coolness of night. Then the stars came forth and the moon rose, and by its light the dark forms of several vultures could be discerned, hovering near the dying women, and descending upon the carcass of the dead camel, making night more terrible than the day with their hoarse cries, and filling the heart of the half-conscious Zuleika with dread and horror. With the horrible instinct of their species, the vultures knew that neither of the women was yet dead, and they hovered near, waiting till the final moment of dissolution ere they attacked their prey. Then, as the night wore slowly on, there came another sound than the vultures' cries to break the stillness. It was the trampling of horses' feet, and the sound of men's voices shouting, as they sought for the deserted women. The Nubian slave had been fortunate in his quest, and had found, not alone the water that he sought, but the encampment of Prince Ahmed and his troops. Zuleika heard the voices as one hears in a dream. She heard them approach and then die away, yet she could not rouse herself enough to give one feeble cry in answer. She knew the sounds betokened life and hope, yet could not make a sign to guide them to her. Again and yet again they drew near, then died away again till at last the black cloud of vultures hovering above the dead camel and the dying women caught the eyes of the seekers, and with a loud shout, the horsemen galloped forward. Another moment and Zuleika's rigid limbs were being chafed by friendly hands, and water was poured drop by drop between the swollen lips. Her veil had been drawn aside, and as she revived her eyes met those of a handsome young man, none other than Prince Ahmed himself, who had ridden to her assistance when he heard who it was who lay dying in the desert. With tender care Zuleika was placed upon one of the horses and supported by the prince, who was much struck by her exceeding beauty, and as she had now revived sufficiently to sit up when thus supported, Ahmed lost no time in returning with her to his followers, and setting forth with my fugitive wife. As for the poor faithful Bamba, she was past all aid, and expired even while her rescuers stood over her. Chapter 31. My enemies, in one of the upper chambers of her kinsman's house Artemisia awaited the coming of Zuleika. Since she had sent her servants forth to help her, the queen had never ceased to watch for her arrival, even long before it was possible that she could even have escaped. 100 times a day would Artemisia wander to the casement and look forth over the broad stretch of country it commanded, to see if there was any sign of the expected cavalcade. Those who had known the beautiful queen in the days of her glory found it difficult to recognize her now, so greatly was she changed. 20 years of ordinary life would not so have aged her. The clear pallor of her skin had changed to a dull leaden hue. The handsome aquiline features had become sharp and prominent, and bore the semblance of a bird of prey. The cheeks, once so round, so smooth, were sunken and wrinkled. The white forehead furrowed. The perfect figure wasted and angular, while the eyes wandered restlessly to and fro, and glittered with a wild fire that was almost that of insanity. The long masses of dark hair, once so admired, so carefully arranged, so becomingly dressed, now hung loose and neglected upon her shoulders, giving an added wildness to her appearance. Ever and anon as she wandered aimlessly back and forward, she struck her bosom with her clenched hand, uttering a low, strange moan as of some animal in pain, and calling again and again upon the name of her dead son. "Oh, Selim! Selim!" she wailed, "where art you now, my son? Had paradise opened its gates to you, and left me behind to drag out mine existence alone? Can it be that Ahriman had taken you, because you was my son, and I have sinned so that the gates of heaven can never open at my touch? I would even that you shouldst go to hell rather than to heaven, yea even though it were to the sufferings of hell, for then you and I should meet. Can paradise have a place for you? Within its gates I can never enter. If you, O my son, mine only son, dost love your mother even as she loves you, you wilt welcome the dark depths of hell and all its horrors where you wouldst dwell with me, rather than the glorious scenes of paradise where we would be parted. O Selim, child of my soul, beloved of all my loveless years, do you return to me, or let God have mercy upon me and let my soul go forth to you. She sank upon the floor with a long wailing cry of anguish, and rocked herself backwards and forwards in her despair, calling now in softest caressing tones and anon with frantic wildness upon the lost Selim. Suddenly she was aroused from her solitary grief by the sound of bustle and excitement in the courtyard below. There was a loud trampling of horses, and the sound of men's voices, and as she sprang up and hurried to the window she beheld Prince Ahmed assisting a closely veiled woman to alight from her horse, and in the graceful veiled figure she had no difficulty in recognizing Zuleika. With an exclamation of savage joy, Artemisia hurried from the room, and meeting the party on their way to her, they all returned together to the room. The once stately queen laying aside all attempts at royal state ill her eager haste and fierce longing to know what Zuleika could tell her. To Artemisia she therefore said that she felt sure I had caused Selim to be slain, even if I had not, with my own hands, killed him, for I had boasted to her that I had seen him die. Who, cried Zuleika, knows better than the unhappy Zuleika what fearful spells a Hinzaman can cast over those he would destroy, what dread powers he can call upon to aid him in his wicked designs. Have I not, alas, known for years how terrible were the things he could do, yet was my tongue always tied, and myself constrained by the influence he had over me. I thank God that the spell is broken at last, and that I can speak freely to your highness, and say that the hand which slew your son was the hand of Ahrenzimun. Artemisia gave a shrill laugh of derision as she heard the conclusion of Zuleika's speech, and her voice was fierce with anger as she replied, "If you hast no more than that to tell me, you needst not have come so far. You might have lain and rotted in your prison ere I would have sent help to you. For long I have known that Ahrenzimun killed my son with his foul spells. In the hour Selim died I knew it, and I live now only that I may bring this murderer to a fate as tragic, and an end more lingering and painful, than was the end of my poor son. If you canst tell me what were the means whereby this husband who had cast you off, you paltry schemer, used to procure his ends, speak on, but if not, if you hast no more to tell me than I know already, then, by the heavens above us, you shall find you hast but changed one prison for another, one condition of sorrow for one yet more hopeless. Trifle not with me. You did lead my son unto his death. But for you and your hateful charms, he had been alive now to bless my life, not dead and cold and gone to leave me in despair." Her voice shook, and she ended her angry speech in a wild burst of sorrow for her son, while Ahmed and Zuleika, scarce knowing how to answer her, stood silently by. The queen's mood changed, and she turned again to Zuleika with mock courtesy, as she said, "Come now, tell me all your news, rehearse to me the story of your life with this most wonderful Ahrenzimun. Or stay, I should perhaps rather tell you the latest news. I forgot that you in your captivity canst have heard but little of his fine doings. It must surely give you pleasure to know that this man, to whom you were so true, so exemplary a wife, had risen to the loftiest height of power and popularity since he cast you off. All men praise him, all say that since the days of Darius the Great, there had not arisen a king so fit to add to the glories of Persia and restore to her that position among nations, which was slipping from her. They praise his military talents, his dauntless courage, his tact and kingly address. They praise his person, and say how handsome is this man, how gracious, how full of resource, how capable of governing, how strong of will, yet how generous of purpose. Do I not speak truly, Ahmed? Is it not thus that men speak of the man who had thrust you aside, and whom you in your turn wouldst pull down from his high estate? Doth it not please you to think he is so popular that your own chance beside his is but small? You art alike the illegitimate offspring of El-Jazid, but unlike you, Ahrenzimun was the chosen son, the well-beloved of my once husband, while you were set aside. Surely it must give you pleasure to know it was for no unworthy object. And for you, Zuleika, most beautiful, most graceful of courtesans, you must feel pleasure to know that Ahriman had taken unto himself six of the most beautiful maidens in all Persia, to fill that place in his heart, which you did hold alone. When he wearies of the charms of one, he can try the fascinations of another, whereas you had charms enough to hold his fancy by your own beauty alone. You might have been as great a queen as the most royally born, had it not been that you did bestow your valuable affections upon my son, my murdered son. Oh, you fool! You vain fool! You wretched trifler with men's hearts, said the queen, lapsing again into her hot anger, haste you and tell me all you hast to tell, for the same air cannot be breathed by you and me, your presence stifles me, and you had best be swiftly gone. Trembling with apprehension, yet watching anxiously the face of Ahmed to know what help she might expect from him, Zuleika told of my life with Jalal ad-Din so far as she knew it. What she had to say sounded vague and trifling before such fierce and patient questioning as Artemisia subjected her to, and she felt that her sole hope must now be in the good offices of Prince Ahmed on her behalf, and after a few moments of terrible suspense Zuleika burst into a passion of tears, and was overcome by faintness, half real and half assumed, as an escape from further questioning, while she petitioned to be allowed a few hours in which to recover from her fatigue and collect her thoughts. The angry queen therefore called one of her women and bade her conduct Zuleika to a chamber where she could rest for a little. As she was about to leave the presence of Artemisia, Zuleika contrived to make a sign to the prince that she desired to speak with him, and as he gave her a gesture of acquiescence in return, Zuleika departed a little reassured. Zuleika had been resting for scarcely half an hour when Prince Ahmed came to visit her, and in her then state of suspense and anxiety, it was almost relief that he came so soon. Yet Zuleika was at heart afraid of Ahmed. She felt instinctively that the love she had inspired in the heart of this man was a very different feeling from that with which the poor weak-minded King Selim had regarded her, or the chivalric devotion, which had made her almost a sacred being in my eyes. Ahmed was a man of coarse, determined character, and Zuleika felt only too conscious of her own helpless, forlorn position. She struggled hard, however, to hide her apprehensions, and to maintain her own dignity as long as possible, that she might make better terms for herself. As Ahmed entered, Zuleika rose to receive him, and prostrating herself at his feet said, I sought an interview with you, O Prince, because in your help and in your generosity must the sole hope of the unhappy Zuleika be. The queen, who I thought would befriend, seems like unto one distraught. The death of her son would seem to have affected her brain, since she raves when she speaks upon that subject, and says things which are but the offspring of her own wild suspicion. Zuleika's fine eyes filled with real tears as she thought on her hard fate, and she raised them to Ahmed's face with the timid, suppliant look of a frightened child. But Ahmed was not one to be so easily moved, and he replied coolly, Distress not thyself to explain these things to me, fair Zuleika. Was you doubly guilty? You hast charms enough to cover all your failings. I do indeed perceive that you canst expect no secure asylum from the queen. But in my seraglio you wilt be safe even from her anger, and there you canst forget the past. You dost do me great honour, O Prince. And I am not ungrateful unto you, but I would fain ask whether it is an honourable asylum that you dost offer me? Mine honour is all that had been left to me, wonder not then that I would still guard it even with you. Ahmed frowned, as he replied hastily, What wouldst you have? Your position shall be as honourable as any of my other women, your jewels as fine, your robes as costly, your comforts as well studied. But if you dost ask if I will make you a queen, even as report saith Selim would have done, you art somewhat too ambitious. You dost forget that I am Prince Ahmed, the King Ahmed it should be by right, and I wed but the daughter of a king. You canst find an asylum with me. But it is I, not you, who shall dictate the terms. In your present position, it seems to me, most beautiful Zuleika, you hast but scant choice, and you, Prince Ahmed, hast but scant generosity, or you wouldst not thus remind me of it, cried the mortified Zuleika, almost weeping. Nay, then, replied Ahmed, dry those tears. A man loves not to see a woman's tears, and if you dost accommodate thyself to circumstances, you may have other things wherein you canst indulge your ambition. You canst tell me of this Ahensiman, and of his life ere he met the magician. It seemed to me that you did keep something from the queen, reveal it now to me, and Ahmed will not forget to reward you well. Smile upon me once more, Zuleika, for though I will make no promises to you, I vow you shall have no reason to regret trusting thyself into my hands. Then falteringly and with much hesitation Zuleika told him all she knew, all she suspected, and suggested how her information might be used for Prince Ahmed's advantage. The prince regarded her with much admiration. Verily, said he, you art a clever woman, and a discreet one. It is well you did not tell this to Artemisia, for she would have published it to all the world before the right time. She is not to be trusted now, and you and I must keep our own counsel. I will seek out this robber tribe, and doubtless we shall have the means ere long of showing this Ahensiman to the world as an impostor. Not that either you or I believe him to be one, he had too strong a likeness unto my father for that. And Alzulid is not one to be deceived, but it will serve our purpose to affect to believe it, and if we kill Ahensiman men can believe he was Eljazid's son or not, as they choose. Our purpose will have been gained. Of a truth you art clever to think of this, and to keep it to thyself for so long. Your beauty is not the most dangerous of your many charms after all. And Ahmed advanced towards Zuleika with a look of admiration so bold, so insolent, that she burst into a passion of angry tears, for she felt that the cup of her degradation was full at last. Chapter 32, Abubatha's Warning. It was night, and in my palace of Barsaikha'ad I rested alone within my private chamber. I had come that day from Tehran, expecting to meet Alzulid, but he was delayed upon his journey, and I was alone in the palace, save for the presence of my attendant soldiers and my slaves. 6 months had I reigned, and in the pursuit of ambition I had found a certain measure of solace for my wounded love. Artemisia had spoken truly when she had described my life and prospects to Zuleika, but none save myself knew how much my heart still longed to welcome back my faithless wife, nor how little the charms of other women had been able to banish the memory of my hours with her. I had not yet heard of her escape, for the fortress to which I had sent her was in a remote corner of Persia, and those who had guarded her were not too eager to send me word of her flight. The rich bribe given by Artemisia caused her captors to regard with some indifference my wrath, since it would enable the chief offenders to quit Persia ere I could seek vengeance upon them for their lack of trust. As I reposed upon my couch, I watched the stars peep out one by one and glitter in the dark canopy of the night sky, and my thoughts wandered back to the days of my boyhood, when the stars had seemed to me almost as companions, and when I had watched for that other star whose coming betokened the presence of my white angel. Ah! How far away now it seemed, those days of innocence and trust! How wide the gulf between myself and then! How great had been my fall from the pure aspirations of those days to the sordid ambitions, which now filled my thoughts! Power and pleasure had become my gods, self-gratification my idol. If I sought to do my best for my country and my people, it was that I might reap the rewards of greatness through the gratitude of my people. The pure unselfish patriotism, which animated Ben Alzulid, and made him indifferent to his personal interests, superior to all temptations to enrich or aggrandize himself, was a different feeling to that which inspired me. In all my schemes, in all my efforts, the animating, dominating feeling was self-interest and personal ambition. My people should be great, my country prosperous, because it was my country, and its glory reflected its lustre upon my own life. What had been done by the greatest rulers should be done by me, and if possible I would do more, for I would fain have been the greatest of all rulers myself. Nothing could daunt me, no difficulties deter, because the greater the difficulties, the greater the glory of overcoming them. To my ambitious thoughts, the conquest of other nations was but a matter of time and determination, and if, as I often imagined, the dark angel whom I had seen was in truth helping me to the dominion he had promised, It only required that I should follow where events seemed to open the path before my feet, in order that I might avail myself of his help, in a sphere where the Dark Angel of the Blood Red Star reigned as a mighty king.